Hello and welcome to the Forbes India Cover Story podcast series in association with theindicast.com. My name is Abhishek, and the focus of this issue is Novartis, the pharmaceutical giant, and how its boss, Vasant Narasimhan, expects India to play an outsized role in the company's future. And joining me to talk about it all is Forbes India's cover story author, Manu Balachandran. Hi, Manu. Always fun talking to you. Thanks for joining in.
Hi, Abhishek. I hope you're doing well.
I'm very well, thank you. You've written about pharma in the past and we've talked about it. And this time around, the focus is on the CEO by himself of this behemoth of a firm. You say that apart from Mr. Narasimhan being the youngest among his peers, he is a bit of an exception. Why is that? And how did you discover that?
We've written about pharma in the past, but I think a lot of that was during the time of COVID. Mm-hmm. What happened is this time, Mr. Narasimhan, he's commonly known as Vas Narasimhan, and he was visiting India, which has become something of an annual ritual now. So he comes every year around this time to Novartis' campus in Hyderabad. Mm-hmm. They have a huge campus in Hyderabad. They employ about 8,300 odd people there, which is where a lot of the support function for their global operations take place. I say he's an exception primarily because if you look at the top 20 pharmaceutical companies in the world, which is probably led by Johnson & Johnson, your Pfizer, Sinopharm, Roche, Merck, none of them are led by anybody of an Indian origin. So in that itself, Mr. Narasimhan is an exception. The second is, if you actually look at all of them, they all come from some sort of business background. Mr. Narasimhan is actually a trained doctor. He has come up through the R&D ranks. He was the chief medical officer at Novartis for a long time before he took over. That's another one. And also he's, I think, the youngest amongst many of his peers, if you actually look at the top 20 pharma companies. So in all of this, he's something of an exception. At 47, you know, leading a company the size of Novartis, and he's been leading the company since he was about 41. And he's had a phenomenally long tenure, which is unusual in the pharma industry, because the pharma industry is a cyclical business. You know, you have crazy amount of ups and downs. So it's not very usual for people to stay on for too long. He stayed on for long. So all of this, I think, in my view, makes him an exception.
Right. He joined in 2005 is what I read in your piece. And he's been there for a while. So he's got a deep knowledge, not only of the industry, but the culture of the company. And he may have had a large role in setting that as well.
Without doubt, he joined in 2005 after, I think, a brief stint with McKinsey, and then he joined Novartis. He's led, you know, I think out of seven businesses that Novartis had in the past, he's worked closely with three of them. And so he knows the structure of the company very well. And so that included, I think, there was something to do with the generic business that Novartis had at some point. So he worked very closely with that. And I don't recollect the other two, but yes, there were about three out of seven that he's worked with.
Right. And you talk about the fact that India for Novartis is a huge market. Recently, I read about Intel and they had decided to mark India as a separate. So previously it was APAC and Japan, let's say. So now they merit India as a standalone country. So there are a few multinationals in different industries that are taking note of the demand from the country. How important is India for a company like Novartis? Obviously, not disproportionately large, but big enough for it to merit attention then.
So in Novartis's case, I think the interest primarily doesn't come as from a consumer point of view. India barely makes up, I think, about $200 to $300 million in terms of sales. And primarily, after Novartis sort of turned its attention into a pure play innovative medicines company, which basically means that unlike a company that was dabbling in all sorts of generics, eyewear, animal medicine, you know, and all of that, they've just entirely focused on coming out with medicines that probably will, say, treat rare diseases or diseases that really don't have cure, for instance, cancer or, you know, heart diseases. So they have transitioned to that. Now, from that point of view, treatments are very expensive. So India really doesn't make sense at this point from a consumer point of view. What India makes sense for them is in helping them in their global operations. So whether it is in analyticals, whether it's in data science, whether it is to do with fundamental research work being done in India, pharmacokinetic, you know, work that is being done in India. So I think all of that, India plays a crucial role. And that is what Narasimhan is actually, you know, sort of building the India business into. And he made this, you know, statement, I think, when we were meeting him, he said when he used to come in 2008, 2007, there was nothing in the Hyderabad campus, probably 300, 400 people that they had. It was a smaller structure, you know, all of that. And in the last 15 years or so, it has transitioned into this huge conglomerate within the country, employing 8,300 people. It's a huge campus there and doing a lot of the support function for the global operations. India is one of the three, you know, hubs for Novartis at the moment, where they do these sort of, you know, work.
Right. In terms of talent itself, if you were to, did you get a chance to talk to him on recruitment? Where do they find the right people? Because the moves that they make in India will have global repercussions, because it's not just about consumerism, as you said, because the India's market may not be as big, but a lot of work will happen from here.
So what Narasimhan basically makes a point of is that over the last decade or so, research institutions, educational institutions in the India, you know, the churn, the kind of talent that have been coming out has been quite significant. That apart, India's pharma industry is also going through some sort of transition. Even the generic manufacturers that operate within the India, they are looking at innovative medicine. So the talent who were probably outside the country, now they're returning back to the country. So all of that makes talent pool available in the country, you know, increase compared to what it was probably a decade ago. So, which he makes a point of, he says that the talent pool in the country is quite large for them now to start even focusing on fundamental research that they were not doing earlier. It was part of the support function, whether it was HR or data science, analytical, now more into fundamental and life sciences research is an area that they can focus on with the talent pool that's available in the country.
Right. And they've also been on a bit of an acquisition spree. Would that be right? Or rather, they have done their fair share to you know, expand their footprint as well and their share.
Absolutely. But none of their acquisitions have happened in India. But, you know, because they're transitioning into a pure play pharmaceutical innovative medicines company, what's happened is a number of the subsidiaries that they had, they have been selling off. Say, for instance, a consumer business that they had, they've sold off. I think they pocketed about $20 billion, a huge money. Then they had an eyewear business. Then they had animal medicine. So they've been hiving off all of their sort of different businesses, and they're sitting on a huge bank of money, which has actually helped them, you know, and in the journey to this pure play innovative medicines, they've been able to identify companies and acquire them. So over the last, I think a few years, or last year alone, they have managed to pick up or acquire some 15 odd companies. And these sort of acquisitions are in the sub sort of 1 billion category. That is what they've been focusing on.
Right. And in a country like India, where I think affordability is one big point, and the government also has had a role, or was there a judgment from the Supreme Court in 2013?
So I think, the 2013 judgment that you speak about, that was seen globally as something of, you know, I mean, they didn't see that favorably, primarily because, you know, it was a huge win for the generic market in the country. Mm-hmm. And India is probably the largest generic manufacturer in the world. Although we are, you know, the pharmacy of the world, you know, when global companies look at India, it's sort of with rulings such as this, they say that, you know, it hinders their sort of R&D globally also, because if you have a large market like India focusing on generics, it doesn't really add to that. But from an Indian consumer point of view for Novartis, it's going to take some time before India can emerge, you know, into that role where, you know, the sort of the consumers will have that purchasing power to sort of buy these medicines, unless the government sort of steps in and, you know, we have insurance rules like what is there in the US, and there's a system of reimbursement. With China over the last few years, you know, with a stronger focus on intellectual property and in terms of reimbursements, they have managed to make some transition, which has made it quite favorable for Novartis to look at. But at this point, India really doesn't, you know, for them in their pure play innovative medicines, it's still a very small market. They primarily focus on China, US, Japan and Germany as the markets they want to focus on.
And when you say innovative, in the pharmaceutical context, what would that constitute? A couple of examples maybe? Or is it to look at different concoctions to make a drug? Or is it look for medicines that have a mass reach? How would innovation be defined in an industry like this?
So I think, say, for instance, you know, breast cancer or something like lymphoma, right? Now to target that, all pharmaceutical companies in the world will be sort of trying to find a cure for that, right? And so if when you transition into something like that, they specifically focus on, say, five different areas, right? Cancer, heart, you know, and different areas within that, and target sort of diseases that are quite common. So that is how it works for them. So these guys have brought out something called Kisqali, which is a breast cancer drug, which has got huge sort of potential. I think upwards of $4 billion globally. They have another medicine called Iptacopan. I think that's for paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria. I think I'm not pronouncing it right, but I think it's basically for a rare blood disorder. So all of this, you know, it's not your common sort of diseases. It's these diseases, you know, that are not curable. That is this kind of medicine, the kind of diseases that they're targeting.
Given that your mom is a doctor, I think you've done well in pronouncing those few. Yeah. And what's next for the company? Where is it that they are headed? And you quote him saying that he's only getting started.
So I think, look, from, you know, I mean, obviously the whole idea is this whole pure play innovative medicine. They've made the transition very well over the last 7 years or so, sold off all sorts of different subsidiaries now to entirely focus on bringing out cure for these diseases that we've spoken about, whether it's in the area of, you know, cardiovascular health or whether it's in the areas of cancer. So the entire focus now, and because he comes with an R&D background, the entire money is being pumped into focusing on finding cure for this. India will play a huge role for them. Like I said, they are one of the three hubs for the company, and they will see more action coming out of India. So whether that helps in the, you know, how, and how it'll help in finding some cure eventually, that we'll have to wait and see. But the transition is now complete. The focus is entirely on these areas. And I think as with many other pharmaceutical companies globally who've now made this transition, and we'll now have to sort of wait and see how it plays out in the long term.
Great. Thank you very much, Manu, for your time on this podcast and for the cover as well.
Thank you so much, Abhishek.